There are women, too, as well as men, and the flute is mingled with them. In that chorus, the voices of the individual singers are hidden. What we hear is the voices of all together. To be sure, I am referring to the chorus which the old-time philosophers knew. In our present-day exhibitions, we have a larger number of singers than there used to be spectators in the theaters of old. All the aisles are filled with rows of singers. Brass instruments surround the auditorium. The stage resounds with flutes and instruments of every description. And yet, from the discordant sounds, a harmony is produced. I would have my mind of such a quality as this. It should be equipped with many arts, many precepts, and patterns of conduct taken from many epochs of history. But all should blend harmoniously into one. How, you ask, can this be accomplished? By constant effort, and by doing nothing without the approval of reason. And, if you are willing to hear her voice, she will say to you, abandon those pursuits which heretofore have caused you to run hither and thither. Abandon riches, which are either a danger or a burden to the possessor. Abandon the pleasures of the body and of the mind. They only soften and weaken you. Abandon your quest for office. It is a swollen, idle, and empty thing, a thing that has no goal, as anxious to see no one outstrip it as to see no one at its heels. It is afflicted with envy, and in truth, with a twofold envy. And you see how wretched a man's plight is, if he who is the object of envy feels envy also. Do you behold yonder homes of the great, yonder thresholds uproarious with the brawling of those who would pay their respects? They have many an insult for you as you enter the door, and still more after you have entered. Pass by the steps that mount to rich men's houses, and the porches rendered hazardous by the huge throng. For there you will be standing, not merely on the edge of a precipice, but also on slippery ground. Instead of this, direct your course hither to wisdom, and seek her ways, which are ways of surpassing peace and plenty. Whatever seems conspicuous in the affairs of men, however petty it may really be, and prominent only by contrast with the lowest objects, is, nevertheless, approached by a difficult and toilsome pathway. It is a rough road that leads to the heights of greatness, but if you desire to scale this peak, which lies far above the range of fortune, you will indeed look down from above upon all that men regard as most lofty. But, nonetheless, you can proceed to the top over level ground. Farewell. Letter 85. On Some Vain Syllogisms. I had been inclined to spare you, and had omitted any knotty problems that still remained undiscussed. I was satisfied to give you a sort of taste of the views held by the men of our school, who desire to prove that virtue is of itself sufficiently capable of rounding out the happy life. But now you bid me include the entire bulk either of our own syllogisms or of those which have been devised by other schools for the purpose of belittling us. If I shall be willing to do this, the result will be a book instead of a letter. And I declare again and again that I take no pleasure in such proofs. I am ashamed to enter the arena and undertake battle on behalf of gods and men, armed only with an awl. He that possesses prudence is also self-restrained. He that possesses self-restraint is also unwavering. He that is wavering is unperturbed. He that is unperturbed is free from sadness. He that is free from sadness is happy. Therefore, the prudent man is happy, and prudence is sufficient to constitute the happy life. Certain of the Peripatetics reply to this syllogism by interpreting unperturbed, unwavering, and free from sadness in such a way as to make unperturbed mean one who is rarely perturbed and only to a moderate degree, and not one who is never perturbed. Likewise, they say that a person is called free from sadness, who is not subject to sadness. One who falls into this objectionable state, not often, nor in too great a degree. It is not, they say, the way of human nature that a man's spirit should be exempt from sadness, or that the wise man is not overcome by grief, but is merely touched by it. And other arguments of this sort, all in accordance with the teachings of their school. They do not abolish the passions in this way, they only moderate them. But how petty is the superiority which we attribute to the wise man if he is merely braver than the most craven, happier than the most dejected, more self-controlled than the most unbridled, and greater than the lowliest. Would Ladas boast his swiftness in running by comparing himself with the halt and the weak? For she could skim the topmost blades of corn and touch them not.